The scripture today is taken from Luke chapter 18 verses 1 through 8. I'm reading from the New International Version. Listen for the word of God. Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. He said, "In a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' For some time, he refused. But finally he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come back and attack me.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" This ends the reading of today's scripture. Thanks be to God.
Dear hearts and gentle people, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. About 15 years ago, on a Saturday morning, I decided I needed to go to Walmart. And it was relatively early in the morning. Walmart usually isn't very interesting. It just kind of is what it is. And parked the car, started walking towards the entrance, and there were people kind of milling around the entrance, which sometimes happens. And there was this kind of big guy, youngish, but he was a man, probably about 6'2", and then there was another man who was closer to a boy, probably about 6 feet, and they were both bulky guys. They weren't fat, but they were big. And the older man comes and shoves the younger man, and I'm kind of like, wow, didn't expect this at Walmart. And he goes after the kid, and he continues to kind of shove him, and they get into a yelling match. And you know, there's 10 or 15 people watching this, and some of us are saying stop it, but not getting in the middle. And they go back and forth. Somebody goes off to call the police, and suddenly I hear what the man is saying, not the boy, and the man is saying, essentially, "You bum, you owe me money." So I've gone to thinking about the boy and being shoved and how unfair it is for him. And then hearing the man, and it's kind of like, all right, who knows who's actually telling the truth? Who knows what's actually happening? And this goes on for what seemed to me like a really long time. I'm an impatient person. Probably 10 or 15 minutes, and the crowd kind of dissolves. The guys are still going at it, shoving at each other and yelling at each other. And at that point, there's probably about three of us left. And I made a very distinct decision to actually just witness. It's like, okay, I don't know what's happening. I don't know who's right. This is really uncomfortable, but I'm going to stand here. Don't feel like I can get in the middle of it and go, you know, stop between them. But let's see what happens. And eventually, they calm down kind of a little bit. The younger man gets away from the older man far enough. He gets on a bike, motorcycle, whatever it was, and drives away. So I still don't know what the truth was there. And the police never did come, not while we were standing there. And whatever it was that had caused that kind of leveled back out, whatever that was. But for me, that was a test of patience to stand there and to witness and to be present. Like, okay, this is happening. I'm going to be here, whatever it is that happens. So that was kind of my little experience of patience. Let's talk a little bit about kindness. And the interesting things about these fruit of the Spirit is that sometimes one is also another. So I don't know if you've heard of John Oliver. He's a comedian. And I don't watch TV, but every once in a while I see something on Facebook. And he has also done some investigative reporting, essentially. And so he decided to look into the racket of debt buying, particularly medical debt. And he looks into it, and of course he's on a TV show, he's got backup, he's got legal advice. And he sets up a company, which is called Central Asset Recovery Professionals, or CARP, for the bottom feeding fish, and I'm sure he intended that. They put a presence on the internet, and then they're actually offered, and how much was it? It's millions of dollars. I think it was $16 million worth of debt, $15 million in debt. For $60,000, he's with the TV company, they've got the money, they buy the debt. And instead of pursuing this, so this debt was out of statute, out of the statute of limitations, so he couldn't have taken any of these folks to a court and taken them to prison or whatever else. All they could do was try to collect it, but still, it was collectible, it was still a debt. And instead of doing that, he forgives the debt. 9,000 people. 9,000 people. He forgives the debt for this $60,000 that his TV show is willing to pay for it. So kindness, generosity, several things going on there. Okay, so this one's my generosity one. And this is kind of a small little incident. A lady named Ruth Belota out of Pennsylvania, her husband was very ill. And for whatever reason, he is in the hospital for almost a year. I mean, that's a really long time. You've got to be pretty ill these days to be in the hospital that long. And she's not paying attention to the house. She's not paying attention to the yard. She's really focused on getting him well, being with him in this situation that he's going through. And she comes home. So she hasn't, I mean, you know, yards, flowers, spring, all of that. Comes home. Someone has planted her flower boxes. They're blooming with flowers. And she finds out it was her neighbor who wanted her to be able to look at something pretty. All right, let's talk about joy. This is another one of them. All right, Chief Joy Officer. Isn't this the best title ever? That's the title of Richard Sheridan, who owns Menlo Innovations. He's also the CEO. Written a couple books, Joy Inc. and Chief Joy Officer. And he's somebody who back in the 70s got into the technology field. Started there, decides eventually that he makes it to vice president, actually. Makes it to vice president and makes a critical choice at that point. He can't work for another 25 or 30 years in the situation as it stands. Whatever first brought him into doing tech isn't speaking to him, or he's not doing enough of it, or whatever it is that has happened. And he decides that he's going to, as this vice president, he can at least affect his own people, specific ones. He's going to bring joy back. And he's going to make it a place where that can bloom. So he makes the change, not knowing whether he's going to completely bomb and essentially lose his position. Doesn't know what's going to happen. Makes the change, and I don't know, year in, something like that. He's still working at this company, and eventually he founds Menlo Innovations, but he's not there at this point. And an employee says, essentially, how did you have the courage to do this? How did you find the whatever it is that took to make you do this and come to this point? And here's what he says. He said, I looked at him, this employee, and said, David, it was easy, which shocked him. I said, because here is where I want to flip the equation. I decided that the risk of staying the same was far greater than the risk of change. And once I made that decision in my head, racing towards change wasn't racing towards risk. It was running away from it. Because what was at risk was me, my heart, for what I did as a profession. I knew I couldn't keep doing this to carry my life, my family, my career, another at that point, probably 25 years. And so I made this fundamental choice that I'm either going to change and succeed, or I'm going to change and fail and get out. So it worked, and he started Menlo Innovations. And he now gives talks, including TED Talks, if you've heard of those, all over the world about what he managed to do in his company and with joy. Faithfulness. Some of you have probably heard of Dan Price and a company called Gravity Payments. It's out of Washington State. This, again, made it onto the internet at a certain point. So it's a credit card payment middleman. So if you use your credit card, there's somebody in the middle before the money is taken out of your bank, however that works. And he's one of those companies. So he learns the business from his father. And as a fairly young man, he becomes an entrepreneur, starts his own company, and then the recession of 2008-2009 hits, and hits hard. Not certain they're going to make it through. He kind of dials back whatever they were doing in terms of employee salaries. But they weather it, make it through. And about 2011, so this is a couple years after the recession, things are coming back. One of his employees comes to him and accuses him of ripping him off. So the employee is saying, I'm making $35,000 a year and you're ripping me off. And they were. He was profitable at that point. And so Price thinks about this. And first he's offended and then he's hurt, kind of feeling like he was doing good stewardship for the company by not raising salaries unreasonably. But it works on him. And so he decides to give a 20% pay raise that year. And he's profitable the next year. And he does it the year after. And he's still profitable. And he does it the year after. Okay, so three 20% raises, and he's been profitable. And then he hears a story, and I've seen it a couple ways, but apparently someone who kind of came up with him and had about the same level of education. And he finds out that she's making way less than he is. So at this point, he's making a salary of $1.1 million, okay? And he has employees who are making $35,000. I mean, not a bad wage, but... And again, he sits on it, and he takes it to heart. And he's like, oh, okay. And so at that point, he makes a commitment that the minimum wage of his company, and it was tiered how he was going to get there. He did it over a couple of years. But the minimum wage at his company was going to be $70,000. There's a study out there from Harvard that indicates that $75,000 is a tipping point. If you're less than that, you're essentially going to be in emotional pain one way or the other. And if you're more than that, the more money doesn't make any difference. And so he chose his number carefully. He was deliberate about that. And he funds this $70,000 by slashing his own salary. That's partially how he funds it. So he's now making what his employees are making as well after he's kind of done this thinking about all of this. And the pundits are like, he's going to fail. This isn't going to work. He's going to go down. Got a lot of press at that time, positive and negative. He had people calling him saying, well, if you don't make it through, you can do this, whatever the this is. But he weathers it. Company stays profitable, even with this faithfulness and generosity. And then, 3 years later, so this has been going on since 2011. 3 years later, he buys another credit card middleman company out of Boise. So he's in Washington. This is in Idaho. And he makes that same commitment. $70,000 is going to be the minimum wage. Still working. It's still working. So, like I say, faithfulness and generosity. Let's talk a little bit about peace. So I think most people here are probably aware of the successful effects of Rosa Parks' peaceful bus protest on civil rights. And there was all kinds of training that happened before that. She didn't do that out of the blue. There's a lot that happened behind that. People have probably also heard of the protest marches for women's suffrage that eventually got women the right to vote in this country. And, of course, there were England and other places as well. This happened a while ago, back in the 60s. This may be a little bit lesser known, are the effects of Cesar Chavez and the boycotts and hunger strikes that he did, and this was for farm laborers. He was in Delano, California, and ultimately partnered with Dolores Huerta and started the United Farm Workers. It was called something else at the time, National something, but started that. And he got his background from a priest named Donald McDonald, started hearing about Gandhi from that priest, and also got time on the ground through a gentleman named Fred Ross. He started doing voter registration, actually. That's where he started. He didn't start with all of the boycotts and the farm workers. But ultimately, 17 million Americans boycotted grapes. 17 million. Late 60s, early 70s. And through that, the starting of the union and that action, better wages, better benefits, things that were actually fair for those farm workers. And he was so committed to nonviolence, and this I didn't know about him, actually. He was so committed to nonviolence that the fasts he did, he was willing to die. He was actually willing to die rather than that any of his people should go out there and be violent with the police, for example. This is what he said about fasts. The fast is a heartfelt prayer for purification and strengthening for all those who work beside me in the farm worker movement. The fast is also an act of penance for those in positions of moral authority and for all men and women activists who know what is right and just, who know that they could and should do more. The fast is finally a declaration of non-cooperation with supermarkets who promote and sell and profit from grapes. I pray to God that this fast will be a preparation for a multitude of simple deeds for justice, carried out by men and women whose hearts are focused on the suffering of the poor and who yearn with us for a better world. Together, all things are possible. To me, that's actually really an amazing testimony. I mean, there's peace there, there's love, there's self-control, all kinds of things going on there. Gentleness. Mahatma Gandhi made a speech in 1942 called the Quit India Speech. This was, of course, directed at the British. And in that speech, he said this amazing sentence: in a gentle way, you can shake the world. As we all know, he was also committed to nonviolence and had a fairly long road there, although at that point, that was 42. In 1947, Great Britain let go of India and Pakistan. They became sovereign nations again. And this also illustrates, I mean, it's gentleness and other things as well, but illustrates the truth of the parable of the poor widow and the unjust judge. Persistence pays off. Sometimes it takes a while. One of the things I want to point out about these examples is that in most instances, there were fellow travelers, mentors, guides, inner urgings of conscience that assisted. Community can help make us strong so that when we hear the call, we are able and willing to manifest the Spirit's fruit. I would encourage us to think about ways our various communities can strengthen us. So, dear ones, do you know what our gifts are? Gifts, not fruits, gifts. Each other. As I close today, I would like to leave you with a poem that talks about manifesting, perhaps in difficult circumstances, by Oregon's poet laureate, Kim Stafford, from his book, lovely title, Wild Honey, Tough Salt. He says, agenda in a time of fear. Be not afraid. That sound like a familiar phrase? Be not afraid. When things go wrong, do right. Set out by the half-light of the seeker, and I think anybody who shows up in a church in some way is a seeker, for the well-lit problem begins to heal. Learn tropism toward the difficult. He uses language in a wonderful way. We have not arrived to explain, but to sing. Young idealism ripens into an ethical life. Prune back regret to let faith grow. When you hit rock bottom, dig further down. Grief is the seed of singing. Shame, the seed of song. And I actually think that's a hard sentence, but I think it's true. Keep seeing what you are not saying. Plunder your reticence. Songbird guards a twig, its only weapon, a song. Thank you.